Today's episode of Robinson Podcast is sponsored by TrueCar. There's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know. Using TrueCar can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy a new or used car, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience with our TrueCar certified dealer network. Also, just make sure if you're driving around Officer Sarah that your registration is up to date, because she will spot you. She notices those things. There's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. You'll see what other people are paying for the car that you want, and you can know what a fair price is so you can feel confident. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing and enjoy a confident, quick, easy car buying experience. Best of all, TrueCar users have experienced an average savings of over $3,000 off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here once again to talk about why the latest Survivor player lost. And of course, that would be Debbie Wanner. And of course, the person that I'm going to be speaking with today is the great David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
David, I wanted to know, are you wearing your brand new Trubisky jersey?
No, I have been burned too many times by the Bears to go out and buy anything just yet with some guy's name I can't even pronounce.
Yeah. Were you pumped up when the Bears made that trade to indulge me for a minute on this?
No. Although I did get a lot of Facebook messages and tweets from Rahappers asking what I thought about it before I even knew it had happened. So they keep up on their NFL news. And I looked into it. I just think someone in the Bears organization said, hey, you know, we're really getting beat up over this quarterback situation. And we brought on this guy, Glennon, and they beat us up some more. So what do you do in football when you're desperate? You throw a Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they just thought, well, either I'm going to lose my job or I'm going to be a hero. But let's just go for it here.
Yeah. A Hail Mitchy is what they did.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll be following that this fall to see how that ends up playing out.
I don't even think he'll be playing this fall.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Over the next couple of years, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So here we are, David, and we are ready to talk about why Debbie ultimately went out of the game. She looked like she was somebody who was in a pretty safe position coming into this week and part of the Power Six, David. But there was a crack in the Power Six, and that was Officer Sarah.
Yeah. We'll get into that more. I don't want to spill too many beans ahead of time here. But I do want to thank you for saving podcast 1968 for me.
Yes. Okay. Yes. As David is alluding to, I had mentioned in the patron Facebook group that the podcast with Bryce the other day was RHAP episode 1965, as we continue the march to RHAP 2K. And I was trying to solicit ideas for what I should do for the 2000th episode of RHAP, which should be here in about 5 weeks. So we are still trying to figure that out. So if you have any ideas about how to celebrate the 2000th podcast, which will be in 32 episodes, I would love to hear them.
Well, I still think this one is more important than 2K because this was the year I was born.
Yes, yes.
Which may be giving away perhaps too much information to listeners about my age. But
well, David, I do love that you have a unique talent to be able to take whatever we're talking about and turn it into how is it about you?
Hey, you chose 1968 as this podcast number.
Sure.
You can't blame me for that. Sure.
I'm going to release another episode in between when I'm recording this just to throw it off, okay? So you're now listening to RHAP episode number 1969. Summer of Love. Yes. Okay. All right.
All right.
There you go. That might have been 68. I might be wrong on that. Okay.
Yeah. I sort of don't know. Since you, were mentioning, talking about me, I do want to say before we get into this that Debbie herself sent me a tweet 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
And she said that I am, and this is a quote, an astute, objective observer of the Socratic and Spockian fashion.
Spockian fashion.
Yes, and told me to live long and prosper. Yeah. So that spot.
Is Debbie a Trekkie? Because in her Ponderosa video, she also said to the camera person, live long and prosper, did like the Vulcan Spock salute, and then closed the door. I think that maybe we need to get Debbie on to the new Star Trek podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, she must be a Trekkie. And she also is a follower of Socrates. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure to live up to now that she has said that to me.
Yeah. Now, personally, I've always considered you more of a McCoy than a Spock.
Why, you green-blooded.
Yeah. So, interesting. So, Debbie is a fan of the Y blank loss. So, hopefully you'll take it easy on her today.
Well, you know, I do have to remain as an astute, objective observer.
Yes.
So, there will be no special favors given.
Here. Okay. All right. So, David, do you want to set anything up before we get into our discussion of the reasons why Debbie lost the game?
The only thing is that I think you said on an earlier podcast that while you were watching the episode, you thought Sarah would stay true to the Power Six.
Yeah, I did think it was going to be a decoy.
Okay. Well, when I was watching, just the sheer amount of hubris being shown on our TVs by several of those who thought they were in control made me pretty sure that one of them was leaving. So the question then is how big a role that played in the actual votes compared to the story that was being woven for our eyes there. And, well, I guess we'll answer that as we figure out why Debbie lost.
Okay, David. So start things off. Rule number one, you say a survivor needs to scheme and plot. How did Debbie do with that?
Well, I'm going to use Debbie's own words here. She said in her CBS interview that the second time you come to play, you think, all right, I'm going to make alliances and work people from day one. And I would agree. That's exactly what players should think and say and do. Though, obviously, not everyone does. Some decide to just, you know, try fishing some more. But that was last week. So, but my point in bringing this up is that Debbie is absolutely correct here. This rule says that players should indeed be working on alliances from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Debbie accomplished that here. She aligned herself with Brad and Sierra right off the bat. By week two, she was telling us in a web confessional that Brad and Sierra were two of her tightest people. What's interesting is at the same time, she also said Sarah was her number one. And around also that same time, we heard from Sarah about how she loved Debbie like a soul sister and wanted to take her to the end because she trusted her at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So those were all good things for Debbie to get set up early. She also showed that she knew how to properly keep on good strategic terms with other players. For example, in episode 4, she said that she was telling Haley whatever she wanted to hear in terms of how safe she was, rather than telling Haley the truth, which is, you know, she was in danger. So again, that's good. Don't tell people when they're in danger. Just keep everybody happy. And then last week, many of us gave her a lot of credit for pulling off the Aussie boot. But according to what she said in her interview with you, she doesn't even take full credit for that because she said it was a group effort.
Well, everybody knows Debbie is very humble, even more humble than you, David, that she does not accept credit for things that she had nothing to do with.
Hey, I am the humblest person out there. No one is more humble than I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Debbie is.
Maybe Debbie is. And yeah, that was, I have to admit, that was surprising when she said that in the interview. But even if she couldn't take credit for the whole thing or didn't want credit for the whole thing, she at least seemed to be the one who sparked it. At least, again, from what we saw on TV. And she said that she was able to make that happen because she was acting as if it were possible that she would turn on Brad. So, again, presuming all of that is the case, good strategic thinking there.
And again, I don't know how much of it is revisionist history. Stephen Fishback will always tell you that exit interviews are not canon. In your heart of hearts, how much do you buy into all that?
Partially. You know, we'll talk more about the acting job that she was doing. By the way, you can't see, but I'm making little air quotes mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
The acting job. We'll talk about that more later. I do think that she was doing some good things here, but there was one point where she just couldn't quite get to. And she said herself in the Ponderosa video that she doesn't have the Machiavellian streak in her to make it to the end. Well, rule number one used to specifically refer to Machiavelli as someone to emulate in game terms. So the fact that Debbie mentioned a lacking in this area does speak to her full ability to scheme and plot. She could do a decent job of it, but not quite the job necessary to get further in the game.
So, David, rule number two is to not scheme and plot too much. Do you feel like that Debbie was guilty of this?
I do think that part of what was missing from her scheming and plotting was the ability to know when she needed to do it and when she overdid it. And I know that you're thinking Debbie would never overdo anything.
Except for sit-ups.
Right.
That's how you get an 8-pack.
No, you can't overdo it. She showed those again in the Ponderosa video, too. But, she did overdo this a bit. You know, as I mentioned a few minutes ago here, Sarah completely trusted her early in the game. And then something changed. This took me back to Korong when Debbie said in confessionals that there was no way Joe or Aubrey would ever turn on her, and she was absolutely safe. And then something changed there as well. In both cases, what changed was that she began plotting and scheming too aggressively. I said in her first season that Debbie may have felt like she was building alliances, but in at least some cases, she was actually driving people away. And to me, that's clearly what happened here as well. She tried to reach out to Aubrey, but instead she sent Aubrey straight to Sarah with information that drove Sarah away. And really, Debbie had been scheming and plotting too much since the first week, when Sari pulled her aside and gave her advice that basically amounted to, hey, don't scheme and plot too much. Debbie essentially told us in confessional at the time that she knows this game better than Sari. And I remember that moment very clearly because, you know, I was watching, I was live tweeting, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she just said that. And a lot of people were right there at the time also. It is clear, however, that Sari knew what she was talking about. On the one hand, Debbie was insisting up and down that there was no way the Power Six would ever break. But on the other hand, she was feeding misinformation and trying to stir things up with people like Aubrey, even though it didn't seem like there was anything for Debbie to gain by doing that. She was basically poking a hornet's nest through unnecessary scheming that came back to sting her. When she was voted out of Korong, I said that Aubrey was dead right in saying your allies need to be solid. And Aubrey would probably say the same thing now because Debbie was just overdoing it. She was not a solid ally. She could not be a solid ally for Aubrey and therefore for Sarah.
David, one of the things that you talk about in rule number two is about not forming an obvious couple or duo, but the six really did seem to be very out in the open about them being a six. And even at that tribal council, there was a lot of talk about, hey, you're either in the six or you're not. And we saw both sides sort of jawing back and forth, and Sarah obviously playing it up how she was part of the six. Do you lay any of that at Debbie's feet?
I do, but not necessarily in the same way. When I talk about forming an obvious duo, I don't generally expand it all the way to the whole size of the alliance, because it often happens that alliances get outed and you know that there's this one group over here and another group over there. And if you didn't know, Probst still call it out. I do say that there was a lot of cockiness there, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. I think it's a tricky thing to handle because you don't want to signal to the six that you're playing both sides, but you also don't want to sort of say, hey, there's no way you can crack this. We're six. You're not in it. And you also, you know, want to give Jeff an answer that he's not going to say, what kind of non-answer is that? So it's really hard to sort of like ride the fence between the two things.
The problem was, though, a lot of what happened didn't just happen in tribal council. It happened at camp. It happened in confessionals. And that shows a mindset that, like I said, we'll get to in a little bit here.
I mean, I was in a little bit of the position that Sarah was in back in the Amazon, where I was voting with Heidi and Alex and Jenna at the final seven, or so they thought, but I was actually voting with Matt and Butch and Christy. And in that spot, I was talking about a lot at tribal council of the three people I'm voting with and stuff like that, that really was true to everybody that was at that tribal council. So it's a tricky thing to try to navigate.
Yeah, and I think that Probst and the producers in general would much rather you say that, because then they can, you know, play it up as the suspense. Who's he talking about? Mm-hmm. You know, although in this case, I think they played up instead the just the hubris rather than the question. Although, you know, I guess, like you said, you thought that Sarah was going to stay true. So they still left enough questions there, obviously.
So then rule number three is to be flexible. Debbie is a former ballerina. Surely she must be a flexible person.
Well, she's flexible on the balance beam.
Yes, or so we hear.
So we hear. But besides that, unfortunately, this is another place where Debbie in her second season played much the same as Debbie in her first season. Because when she lost in Koh Rong, I said she didn't show much strategic flexibility and made the cardinal mistake of tying herself to a single alliance so much that she wasn't willing to consider the possibility of progressing in the game in any fashion other than with Aubrey or Joe at the time. This time, while Debbie claimed to be open to the possibility of working with other players, like Aubrey, I don't think that was ever actually in her plans. Instead, she seemed completely locked in with the Power Six, with Sierra and Brad in particular. Without that flexibility, she just didn't give herself enough options. If she had other people that she had been talking to and scheming with, she might have heard through the grapevine about what was going on and maybe known this blindside was coming, or, you know, avoided the blindside entirely. But she didn't have that. She had her group and they were all locked in their bubble, except for Sarah, of course, who was, you know, poking her head outside the bubble.
Yeah, it does seem as though Debbie and Sarah were fighting for that same spot in the Power Six as sort of like being another lieutenant of Sierra and of Brad. And so I think that Debbie was particularly threatened by Sarah. I think that's why she wanted to make sure that she was still part of the Six, but she wanted to make sure Sarah was going out at Six and didn't really have any allies who were in that spot.
Right, right. I agree.
And so ultimately, she forces Sarah's hand and also helps out the people that are working on the other side. All right. So Debbie was not really flexible in what she wanted to do. But let me take a moment and thank our sponsor, who is extremely flexible. And that would be the Samsung Flex Wash and Flex Dry washer and dryer pair available at Home Depot. David, how about that? Rule number three, be flexible.
Sounds like they're following the rules.
They're following the rules. These innovative appliances are the first ever that allow you to wash two loads and dry two loads of laundry at the same time in the same machine. Think of all that you could get done when you wash two loads of laundry at the same time. So when you do your laundry, you don't have to mix different colors and fabrics together. So you don't risk color transfer or fabric damage. FlexWash integrates a large capacity lower washer for everyday washes and an additional washer for separate colors or delicates. Flex Dry integrates a large tumble dryer for everyday items and a flat dryer for the delicates. So the washer and dryer have a number of innovative features that make doing the laundry easier on you and your clothes. You don't need to scheme and plot nearly as much, David, to tackle all this laundry.
Well, I just did four loads of laundry over the past day and a half.
You could have done it twice as fast.
I could have. And one of the items was a shirt that my wife has. And it has these, it's not glitter, but it's sort of like glitter. And the last time I did it, it got all over everything. I'm still picking these things off of my socks. So I had to do it separately. This would have been perfect.
Yeah, FlexWash offers a steam wash option for removing stains and a self-clean to keep the washer odor-free. FlexDry also features multi-steam to steam away odors and wrinkles. And while SensorDry optimizes drying temperatures to avoid damage to your clothes. And how about this? Wi-Fi connected, allowing you to start and set the machine and receive an alert when the load is finished. Together, FlexWash and FlexDry offer the ultimate flexibility to provide you the best possible care for your clothes. That's the Samsung FlexWash and FlexDry available at Home Depot. All right, David, let's get into rule number four. Don't let your emotions control you. Now, Debbie didn't do this, right?
No, 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 of course not. She never had any emotional lack of control at all. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm lying, because I will say,
hold on, that Debbie's BS detector is going off.
I thought that was a busy signal.
No, BS detector.
I do feel like there is some amount of questioning that we have here, some mystery left, because we saw one thing, And Debbie told us another thing. So we're going to have to work through that. You know, was she going crazy because of Brad? Was she acting or wasn't she? I don't know for sure. I do know that she should get a sponsorship from Snickers for mentioning how she needed one in pretty much every interview.
Yeah, why? Because she was hungry and it satisfies? Is that what it is?
Well, I think it's the commercials where they show the, you know, the person, you're not who you normally are.
Yourself sometimes. Sometimes you're Debbie. Yeah.
Right, right. But, you know, I do wonder this. If it was almost all acting, why did she say something about Brad being a dictator in the voting booth a few episodes back? There was no one else there. There was no acting necessary.
I mean, she did say to me, oh, I had some real issues with Brad, but I did play it up a lot. I was chewing on the shrubbery, right. I think was her quote.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that does indicate that, yes, there was an issue there. And again, when she came back at the merge and she went and talked to Brad to confirm, oh, yeah, we're all good, even though whatever had happened. So like you said, there was some emotional outburst going on, and how much of it was real, how much of it was staged. I think we go back to interviews are sometimes not 100% candid. I guess we'll never fully know, but I would also say it doesn't matter. Because whatever might have gone on with Brad in reality was all patched up by this point in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Debbie wasn't targeted by Brad for exploding on him. It was exactly the opposite. She was targeted in part for being too close to Brad. So I guess we can just say it's one of those mysteries of life and, you know, move on to the next rule.
Okay, rule number five is to pretend to be nice and play the social game. Keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. Okay, how did Debbie do with this? Did she pretend to be nice enough for your taste?
Yeah, here's where we have one of our bigger problems. As Aubrey noted, Debbie was starting to get cocky like she didn't go wrong, and that goes directly against the idea of pretending to be nice. As you and Aris discussed, maybe it was using the advantage that made her feel more confident. Maybe it was because she was so sure that the Power Six group was in charge. You know, for example, Debbie had a web confessional in which she said the chance of one of her six being voted out was zero, that nobody on her group would flip unless one of them was a total idiot. She even went so far as to say that everyone else had better kiss the butts of the Power Six. So, you know, this goes back to what you were saying, and then some. It ratchets it up. And that's never going to fly on Survivor. If she was saying that in confessional, you know that some of this was coming through when she was with the rest of the tribe as well. You just cannot be that cocky in confessional and not have any of it show at all.
Especially if you're Debbie.
Right. Right. And, you know, we saw her talking to Aubrey, saying, if you work with me, if you continue to show me that I can trust you, there's a way in. Now, I can't say for sure, of course, but it sure felt like Debbie was enjoying lording over Aubrey the fact that she was in charge now. But as Debbie herself said in week two, past relationships absolutely matter. And her past relationship with Aubrey was that Aubrey voted her out in part for getting too cocky. Debbie needed to rein that in, but instead she put it all out there, confident that nobody could do anything to stop them.
Okay, David. Then rule number six is don't be too much of a threat. How much of a threat was Debbie?
I would not have considered Debbie to be a threat per se, but clearly Aubrey did. Now, how do I know that Aubrey clearly did? Because there was a web confessional from Aubrey titled Debbie is the Biggest Threat. So she talked about how Debbie started to feel power hungry and cocky, and she was all over the map weaving different tales. And because of this, Aubrey was willing to risk her whole game on trusting Sarah to get rid of the erratic players, because erratic and unpredictable players can indeed act as a threat. Furthermore, Aubrey said Debbie is a big threat because people don't think she's a threat and because everyone thinks she's in their back pocket. But Aubrey said Debbie is a very talented liar, a mastermind, and a genius. So I think we have at least a partial answer to the question of why Debbie was the target instead of Brad or Sierra. And it's because Aubrey had such a high opinion of Debbie's game ability.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if Aubrey felt like Debbie was in good with so many of the other Power Six allies, That could mean that Debbie was more of a key player than we realized, at least in the eyes of Aubrey. But perhaps more importantly, it also meant that Sarah was not such a key figure in the overall alliance. Kind of like you said, they were fighting for that position there. And once Aubrey told Sarah, hey, you're on the bottom of the Power Six, that's not where you want to be, then, you know, that sparked something in Sarah. And Sierra did mention in a web confessional that all it would take is one person in the Power Six not feeling like they were being heard and flipping because of it. And this pretty much describes exactly what happened with Sarah. At one point, Sarah said, the plan was made without even asking me. And I think history shows that is something you really don't want to do to Sarah on Survivor.
No.
Yeah. So Aubrey came to Sarah with information and the idea that if the two of them stick together, they can run the game. And I'm sure that sounded much more appealing.
But how does Debbie control that Aubrey thinks of her as a threat? Is there anything that she did in this game that you feel like that's why she ends up losing in this spot?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about in Rule 5. The way she was acting so cocky, the way she was acting like, I can save you. You know, if you'll just do what I say, then maybe there's a way in for you. She was acting like she was in control. And by acting like you're in control, sometimes that makes you appear to be a threat. So, you know, Aubrey saw that, and Aubrey knew her from before, saw some of the same stuff going on, and has obviously a pretty high opinion of Debbie's abilities in the game. Plus, she must have seen how well Debbie was getting along with Brad and Sierra and the rest of them. So that's what I think Aubrey meant when she said everybody thinks they have her in their back pocket. And that makes her more of a threat.
Okay, David. Rule number 7, the great, vote out the weak and then the strong, then the weak and then the strong. So where did Debbie fall in this pecking order?
Well, normally at this point, as you know, we would be still talking about voting off the strong with a reminder that the strong can either be strong in challenges or strong in organizing others, always with the idea of keeping yourself and your allies safe. In this case, Debbie does seem to have been viewed as strong in organizing, as we just, you know, talked about with Aubrey, or at least strongly organized with the Power Six. I wouldn't say that she was viewed as being strong in challenges, despite her 8-pack. Because Sarah had said previously that she didn't think Debbie could beat her in challenges. So, you know, again, we have another variation from the theme here. And that brings up the question of, were there other reasons that they targeted Debbie? For her own part, Debbie said in interviews that maybe they thought that Sierra and Brad were more likely to have an idol. I don't know about that. That, you know, we didn't hear a peep about that on the show. So that sounds like pure speculation. It may be that, as Stephen suggested on Know-It-Alls, Sarah didn't want to completely turn on the Alliance, and now she can say that she didn't vote against the Alliance, just against that liar, Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say this part will just have to remain a little hazy for now.
Okay. As always, rule number 7, very hazy. David, let's talk about these appendices. You know, the first appendix is do whatever it takes to get idols, but we're talking a little bit here about that, well, Brad and Sierra, they were more likely to have an idol. Don't you want a little bit of heat that, oh, they could have an idol?
I'm not sure what you mean, a little bit of the heat.
A little bit of that you want people to think like, whoa, hold on, you know, let's not gun for David because, you know, he could have an idol. He's somebody that could have an idol. Whereas Debbie, no way Debbie has an idol.
Yeah, I mean, maybe she was never looking for an idol and that's why they figured that, you know, it was safe to target her. I feel like most players at one point or another go out searching for idols and we just don't see a because it would take up all our TV time to show them looking and not finding anything, especially when we know who has the idols. So it's possible she may have looked. Maybe she didn't look as much. Or maybe, again, you know what she said about Brad and Sierra, it could just be pure speculation. If she did look, well, she looked too late because they were all claimed by the time she did so. So there's not really a whole lot we can say in that regard here.
Okay, and then the other appendix has to do with the final tribal council, which I don't think that Debbie was set up for particularly well.
Right, and also, you know, it deals with seating the jury and everything. And there was no one here looking ahead and saying, ooh, good, I get Debbie on the jury and she'll definitely, you know, vote to give me the million.
Okay, David. So putting it all together, why did Debbie lose?
Well, as we've discussed, Debbie in her second time around was rather similar to Debbie in her first time around. She did some plotting and scheming, and at certain points was pretty good at it. But by her own words, she's not Machiavellian enough to do the scheming and backstabbing necessary to make it all the way to the end. Yet at the same time, she also overdid it, spreading lies when there was no good strategic reason to do so. And she didn't give herself the flexibility to move around in the game beyond her core allies. But I think the biggest problem in all of this was summed up by Cochran after he met with her on Exile Boat. He said, one of her fatal flaws is overconfidence. That Cochran's a good judge of character.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, he absolutely nailed it. The flaw that proved fatal to Debbie's game was indeed her overconfidence. There was no doubt in her mind that her alliance had this game wrapped up and she would get to the end of the game with them. That cockiness came out and others saw it, allowing them to take advantage of it and flip things around on her. And that is why Debbie lost. And I hope I lived up to the Socratic and Spockian objectives.
Okay. Live long and prosper, David. And that's so right. When is Pon Farr?
I think that's every 7 years.
Yes.
So
coming up?
So it yeah, I guess.
Okay. All right. So, David, we got a very exciting situation that we are dealing with coming up here, going into episode 11. We're down to the final 10. A lot of things in play. We have, of course, the new Power Six. We have the minority group of four, but they have a lot of idols. Sarah can cancel a vote. The 5-5 rock draw is in play. Zeke and Andrea still don't like each other. So, David, how do you see the final 10 rounds shaking out?
Well, it's shaking is exactly right, or as they keep saying, you know, reshuffling, because that deck, well, those cards are flying all over the place at this point. Because, like you said, okay, Andrea and Zeke, they paired up for this vote. I don't think they're going to stick together for another vote. I think they're going to go back to targeting one another. And it brings up the question. You said there was a new solid six. I don't think there's anything solid about those six. So how many factions are there going to be? Two, three, a bunch of different splinter groups? I don't know. And it'll be a little bit crazy potentially. But I do like how nobody else in the former Power Six knows who flipped, in part because Sarah herself spoke strongly in favor of keeping it solid at Tribal Council, which you had mentioned at the top of the podcast. Mm-hmm. But if Debbie was telling it like it was, like it really was when she had her interviews, I would guess that the suspicion will quickly fall where it belongs, because she was suggesting, yeah, that they knew that Sarah was spending a little too much time with the people outside the Power Six.
Mm-hmm.
The other possibility is Sarah will just admit it and maybe use the excuse that I had referenced earlier about just wanting to target Debbie the liar. Personally, I think she has to fess up, because if she doesn't and the rest of her old alliance figures it out, which I think they probably will, then she becomes an instant target. And I just don't think her newfound allies can stick together and keep her safe by continuing to target the Brad and Sierra group. So I think she's going to have to fess up. I don't know what happens at that point. Now we have a number of different people in danger. So, you know, we have Sarah in danger. I still think Andrea is in danger. I also still think Zeke is in danger. Theoretically, Sierra and Brad should still be in danger too, but I don't feel like it will be one of them.
Who's the safest player on the board? Like, if we had a draft of Ty, yeah, I almost feel like Ty or Troyzan, I feel like, yeah, the two that I feel like are pretty, almost no way they go home this week.
Yeah, and Ty especially, because with two idols, you can get a little frisky. If you feel like something's going your way, you can play one and still have the other one.
Not what James thought.
Well, Ty is a little more paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Troyzan, if things started to turn against him, I think he would, but he might try to ride it out. It would be interesting to see. But I think Ty is the safest. Troyzan's the second safest. And I just think Sierra and Brad should be in the most danger, but I don't know. I just don't see it turning on them yet. You've got all these factions moving around. Maybe they decide to go after a quote-unquote easy target. And that target would be Andrea. And I know I've, you know, picked her last week. And I know you picked her the week before. I know Aris picked her this week. But I'm going to predict once again, I really do think that they may just decide, okay, there's too much going on here. Let's find someone that we can target easily and get some agreement on. And I think that could be Andrea.
This is really hard to figure because you do have a lot of idols in play for that side. And the situation I've been talking about is if somebody on that side of four wins immunity, they have enough idols to sort of just block out a vote. You could end up with some sort of like three amigos or four amigos type situation, which would be very exciting if we had that sort of blockade of, okay, you can't pick somebody from this side. And then what would people do?
Yeah, and that was brought up to me on Twitter. I just don't think that will happen because, one, I don't feel like Ty has told anybody mm-hmm. that he has two idols, and I don't think Troy has told anybody that he has an idol, and I just can't see them blowing all their idols at once to survive one vote.
Yeah. Okay, here's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go with the person that's most expendable to both sides. I'll go with Michaela.
Okay.
Where the four, you know, they'd be on board to do that. And if the group of six isn't feeling sure about where to put these votes, or if we get a lot of idols played at this tribal council, then the person who'd be the safest person to vote for would end up being the Michaela.
Well, that's definitely possible. You know, I don't know, though, because I think she has several courses left in the meal that she's gradually eating at tribal council.
Yeah, potentially. So we'll see. And especially if she's rubbing people the wrong way, then I could see it. But this is a tough week to predict.
Yeah. And it will put Ceri in an interesting position, too, because she's trying to protect Michaela. And I think she's pretty tight with Andrea. And if those two names are both floating around, you know, which way does she go?
We don't know. We'll have to wait and see Wednesday night. All right, David, what's the hashtag this week?
Well, I think it has to be Spockian.
Spockian. Okay.
Yes, S-P-O-C-K-I-A-N.
All right. Great job once again, David. Of course, for even more coverage on The Week in Survivor, check out the blogs on robhaswebsite.com where Scott Gallagher is predicting where players should rank on Wednesday night and compares his rankings to what he said last week in a recap of the episode. Michael Trudeau is living it up, and he'll be back next week. Christian Williams is exploring the importance of having a vision of the full playing field and Sarah's candidacy as the most improved player. She was the president last season. Now she's running for candidate of most improved player.
Well, how do you improve from being president other than being queen? And we already have a queen.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And then Catherine Lucas looks back at Sarah to talk about Sarah. You can say it's serendipity. That's from Catherine Lucas. Available now on robhaswebsite.com in the blog section, David. All right. So, yeah, we're about ready to do it again. We got News AF coming up and then Survivor Know-It-Alls this Wednesday night.
That's right. And aren't you going out of country a week after this Survivor Know-It-Alls?
That's right. The following week, passport pending, I will be headed up to Toronto for our Canadian Know-It-Alls and Big Brother Canada extravaganza. Tickets still available for our Big Brother Canada show at robiswebsite.com/Toronto BB Can.
Well, I wish I could go to that one, but still too much going on here. So you'll just have to keep plugging on without me up there.
Yeah, somehow we will go on, David. You will be missed, and not for long, because we'll be back talking to you next week about why the next player has lost Survivor. So take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.